This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. I'm down here in Los Angeles getting ready for the game between the Seahawks and the Los Angeles Chargers. Getting you ready for that. It'll be at 7 o'clock tonight with the pregame beginning at 5. Of course, the Mariners, they'll be playing tonight against the Dodgers. We got a lot to get into. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with some headlines. Well, the Mariners lose last night 11-1, just absolutely blown out. Wade LeBlanc was just drilled as far as how he pitched and no hitting. That's now since Robinson Cano's come back, the Mariners have only scored 5 runs. And, of course, to double things down, the Oakland A's end up getting a victory. So now the Mariners are 3.5 games behind the A's for the wild card. So this is going to make this tough. They're going to continue the series against the Dodgers. And, of course, Houston's coming in on Monday. And so they're also waiting to find out about James Paxton, where he stands as far as his ability to come back from the forearm injury that he suffered on the line drive or on the drive that went to him. So that, of course, that's the Mariners story. Now in football, Marcus Smith, a surprise cut by the Seahawks. Remember, they gave him a 1-year deal, $400,000 signing bonus, but apparently with some injuries and some other things that are, I guess, going on with his personal life, he's decided that it was time to part company, and they did that. Of course, they did sign Eric Walden, linebacker slash defensive end, who had been in Indianapolis and several other places, had 11 sacks 2 years ago. He's 32 years old, so they made that move. A.J. McCarron, Buffalo quarterback, suffered a broken collarbone, a hairline fracture. Don't know how long he's going to be out, but all of a sudden, Josh Allen now may have to start for the Buffalo Bills. That, of course, the stunning news, and again, make you wonder why they made the trade of Tyron Taylor, who now wants to be called Tyron as opposed to Tyrod. So that move is done. Of course, Tyrod and Tyraid is over in the Cleveland Browns. So that's one. Of course, as we found out yesterday, Isaiah Wynn, he gets the torn Achilles tendon and is out for the season now for the New England Patriots. It was a first-round pick, 23rd pick in the first round. So his season now is officially done. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. JB, how are you?
Hey, Mr. Clayton, how you doing this Saturday morning, my friend?
I'm doing well. So how'd you get together with our guys at Sirius, with Pat and with and Jim Miller? That was great to see you there.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been knowing Pat and Jim Miller for a while. I talk to him sometimes on Sirius and call him. We be talking football. That's why I've been knowing him for a while. They invite me when they come down to Seattle. They invite me to come over and hang out, spend the day with them over there at camp.
That's
I've been knowing him for a while. Yeah. Yeah, so it was good to see you, though, Mr. Clayton.
Good to finally see you, yes.
Yeah, it was good to see you and stuff, yeah. So, you know, you were talking about A.J. McCarron. That Josh Allen kid didn't look too bad last night throwing that ball around.
No. He's got a great arm. There's no question about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, him and Baker Mayfield, I tell you, they're making a serious case for them to be the starting quarterbacks in their prospective areas where they're at right now.
Well, Sam Darnold's also making a case, even though he didn't play as well this week as he did in week one, but I think he's making a case to see if he can possibly start.
Yeah. I know Arizona might not. They're going to go with Sam Bradford, but Rosen didn't look too bad either last night. He looked pretty decent, you know, in the time that I watched him play last night in the game. You know, they got a few of these quarterbacks, you know, these young rookie quarterbacks. They're pretty impressive. You know, I know it's preseason and it's not to get ahead, but they look pretty good.
Well, and that's the funny part. You talk about the ebbs and flows of training camp and all that stuff. And you would think that, most, if not all of these quarterbacks are not going to be out there on week one. So now all of a sudden, I mean, now it looks because of the injury to McCarron, there's a good chance that, you're going to see, Josh Allen, who's probably the least prepared and least ready of the 5 top quarterbacks or the 6 top quarterbacks in this draft. And so, and you saw what, was said by Jalen Ramsey, calling him basically trash, which is kind of a bold statement, but he's got a great arm, but man, that's going to really rush him. And it still makes you wonder, why did they try to trade Tyron Taylor? I never really fully understood that.
And, you know, I never understood that either, being that the fact that he brought him to the playoffs, you know.
Right.
And they played it. They were going against the Jaguars that probably had one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the NFL last year. And, you know, it just, you know, it would have been better for them to keep a Tyrod Taylor around and let Josh Allen learn behind him than forcing him, you know, because Adrian McCarron eventually was going to give that job up to Josh Allen.
Right, at some point, but not this early.
I know. Well, this is where you go, the old saying, you got to have a running game when you got a young quarterback.
Mm-hmm. They have that. They still have Shady McCoy.
You're going to have to depend on him. He's going to have to stay healthy. He's going to have to come out there and relieve the pressure off of that young quarterback. Because I tell you, in that division with the Patriots, I watched the Patriots the other night. They looked pretty good on defense. You know, what Bill Belichick did, they look like they're starting to get some remnants of a pass rush. Now, I'm not saying Claiborne is the savior or whatever, but they got some decent push in that game against Philadelphia, although it was preseason, you know.
Right.
But to look at it right now, Buffalo throwing Josh Allen into the fray like that, that's going to be tough. I think they're going to take a step back from what they did last year.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question they will. But that's the thing. I mean, with that injury and A.J. McCarron now being out indefinitely with the fractured collarbone, what this does is it just makes that division so much easier for the Patriots. I mean, you know, can they lose a game to the Jets? Could they lose a game to the Dolphins? Could they lose a game to the Bills? And I'd say no.
The answer is no, no, and no. I just don't understand those three teams. How is it that they cannot, for the last how many years, Mr. Clayton? They haven't. How many years has New England won that division in a row?
What is it, like 16 out of 17, something like that?
I mean, come on.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, the only time that they lost was that one season they won 11 games, and that was the year that Tom Brady was out.
Because
the ACL in the first game, they go to Matt Cassel. Castle gets him to 11 wins, and this is 2008, when the NFC West was terrible, the AFC West was terrible, and all those teams in the East did was pick up and just, beat those teams like crazy, and then, the Dolphins make the playoffs, and the Patriots don't.
I don't get it. How is it that they can have that much dominance? I mean, nobody can come up and challenge them for that division? I mean, Well, right now, the Jets and the Bills won't do it. Not with two rookie quarterbacks. And I don't see Ryan Tannehill with the Miami Dolphins stepping up to the plate and challenging
them. Well, not when they gave up their best two players and their best receiver.
I know. And they're waiting on Devontae Parker to come around and be this out-of-the-blue stud receiver. I don't see that happening either over there in Miami.
No.
I mean, Miami looked like they took a step back as far as their progression was. You know, with Adam Gase as the coach, it looked like they took a step back to me.
Well, like, for example, I mean, they make these quiet moves that you kind of wonder about. You know, Mike Pouncey, from what I hear, is having a real good camp at center. And so now they let him go. And so he's here with the Chargers. So they let Pouncey go at center. You know, they're still having problems at the tackle position. I know the game the other day, they did not block well for the tackles. That's not good. And McCarron has a lesser group of receivers. I mean, it just shake your head.
It just makes you wonder. You know, I'm gonna tell you, the Patriots losing Big Isaiah Wynn, which I know they can probably mask it. That was a huge loss for them, losing that big left tackle because of the Achilles injury. They were dependent on those young guys to come out on that offensive line and have some stability on that offensive line. But
here's the weird part about that. And it kind of makes you wonder a little bit about the 49ers. You know, the 49ers pretty much in a trade for, it was a fifth-round pick, gave him Trenton Brown, the big 6'8 left tackle. And apparently they think he's pretty good in New England because he was winning the left tackle job.
Wow.
I know.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, Trent was a right tackle with the 49ers.
Yeah. With the 49ers, speaking of Pouncey over there in San Diego, I think that's the one team. Don't get me wrong, I respect Pittsburgh, what they're doing. I think Pittsburgh's defense, I would like to see more out of. But I tell you, the San Diego Chargers could be the one team in the AFC to really give scare to a lot of teams this year.
I mean, I would agree.
You look at their defensive line. I mean, have you found a better formidable suit of bookends like Bosa and Ingram? I mean,
nope, they're good.
Phillip Rivers, with Keenan Allen, if he stays healthy, Gordon. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like that San Diego Charger team.
That's a team I picked to win the division.
I would agree with you on that because, you know, Patrick Mahomes has got a learning curve. You can see that. I mean, right. Everybody's dazzled over that 69-yard pass he threw last night against Atlanta. But he still has a learning curve that he's going to go through his ups and downs. And I don't know if their defense is going to be as good as it needs to be to offset that. Now, they got a good mm-hmm. running game. They got a nice running game. I like their running back and all that. But I like San Diego. I agree with you. I would agree with you. San Diego is going to win that division, Mr. Clayton.
Well, of course, we have to move them north, though. They're in Los Angeles. I make that same mistake, too.
I know.
I guess what it comes down to is that, I still wish they were in San Diego because I always like going down there. I love the Charger fans. And, it's just kind of weird because, again, this will be the second time because I was here for the debut of the StubHub Center just to be in a stadium. It's a soccer stadium of 28,000.
I know. I know the Spanos family, they wanted to get out of San Diego and all that, but man, that is the perfect place for that team. That team belongs over there. I know, and they're going to be running with the Rams. They're going to just be like tenants for the Rams to just get a payday off of that stadium. What good is that going to do over there?
Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, say what you want. I know that they're contributing 50% of the building costs and all that stuff, but they're still going to be the number two tenant.
Yeah. They're going to be just like the Jets were with the Giants over there in the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey.
As they still are.
Yeah. They're just the tenants to that stadium. I don't understand that move. That move there just baffled my mind. Anything stick mm-hmm. out to you in the preseason right now, Mr. Clayton?
Well, I mean, just kind of the up and down nature of what these rookie quarterbacks are going through. I think that's probably the biggest story. Certainly the helmet hit thing is still, I think, a mess. That's not good. I think that we're seeing, more teams resting their players and not taking chances and putting them out there on the field.
Yeah.
I think you're seeing some of that.
You've seen a lot more of that. You've seen a lot more veteran players not being played and being mm-hmm. sidelined. It's the event that you don't want to get that person is valuable to you. You don't want to have that person get injured out there. Because, if you think about it, you get ready to come into that crucial point of preseason in that third and fourth game. There's a lot of young guys out there trying to make that team by any means necessary. You could end up having somebody get hurt. So I wouldn't take that chance either. Especially from a team that look like I have the potential of being in the playoffs.
And again, I think you're seeing such, it's almost like coaches are conceding now that the limited number of practices that you have, you really just struggle to get a team ready for a season. And so that you just kind of readjust and say, all right, what can you do here? And just almost forget about it. It's like, for example, how it used to be almost routine that the starting quarterback gets, like one possession or 15 plays in the first quarter. That's pretty much out the door. And how the starting quarterback usually can go into the second quarter, in the second game, that's pretty much out the door. And what about Philadelphia? They're down Carson Wentz. They're down Nick Foles with a shoulder injury. And so they go into their third preseason game with Nate Sudfeld. And do you think they're going to, give a good show of what they can do as a team? Probably not.
No, I wouldn't do it. Definitely not. Definitely not without both of my starting quarterbacks out. No. Mm-hmm. Why would I? I'll just go through the motions and get to the regular season for the season to start.
JB, it was great seeing you the other day over at the Seahawks, and got a jump here. We've got breaking news out of Cleveland. And JB, thanks for the call.
Thank you, sir.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. News out of Cleveland. Looks like Josh Gordon has cleaned up all the stuff that he's had off the field, and he is now going to report. He said that he wanted to thank the Players Association, the Browns, for the support. The Browns have given him the support. So Josh Gordon now coming in and reporting for the Cleveland Browns. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, good morning, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How's Los Angeles treating you?
Well, hard to tell. I mean, I caught a 5 o'clock flight that got me here by 7:30, and then just came over here to an airport hotel. So I guess it's treating me okay. They got me into a room, so that's good.
Okay. Now, are you going to be watching the Raiders and the Rams play down there today, John?
I'm going to try to see because with all the games, I'm going to try to see as much as I can. So yeah, going to definitely try to watch that.
Oh, good.
But of course, my big thing is to be over at the Seahawks game against the Chargers.
Right, that should be fun for you tonight, John. By the way, that should be great. And I suppose you'll get reacquainted with Red Bryant, who I think is on the defensive line there with the Chargers, isn't he?
You're talking about Brandon Mebane.
Oh, that's right, Brandon Mebane. Thank you, John. That's correct.
Yeah, Red's been retired now for a couple years. So,
right, that's right, that's right. Oh gosh, I forgot. So look, the Raiders play the Chargers. Excuse me, the Raiders play the Rams in the LA Coliseum, John. The Raiders haven't been in the L.A. Coliseum since they left in 1984. I think that'll be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of old Raiders fans will, I'm sure, be there and, show the Rams how to root for a team, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about John Gruden's comments about the so-called white tiger for Martavis Bryant? I think he should be nicknamed to other people, John. What do you think?
It shows you that he's not too happy with him. I think that's what it says, because he hasn't learned the playbook.
Right, yeah. He comes out when he wants to come out, and boy, he sure does look great. But boy, you got to go to about 14 or 15 times to see him come out of the cage, and go to the zoo before he comes out of the cage.
I know. Well, that's the thing is, I mean, you look and you see what's going on with, there's so many things that John's dealing with. I mean, the one thing I think you can see that's real positive, and I think you'll agree with that, you got to love his play calling.
Yes. Yeah.
He's in total sync right now with Derek Carr.
Yeah. I think it was a great compliment that I saw in one of the clips or one of the quips in the newspapers about how, heck yeah, this kid knows the playbook better than I do. I mean, what a great compliment that is for your quarterback.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, do you see that Monday Night Football and NBC are no longer going to broadcast the national anthem, John?
I saw that. Maybe that could be one of the solutions to this mess. And, because certainly the players, I think they should be consulted more on this stuff, and they should be brought in. I know they've had the one meeting, and that's pretty much it. They have not had another meeting, so that's not good. Right. But it's like, the NFL and the owners and the league can't help themselves. They can't figure this out. And so maybe they need the help from the networks just to ignore it, hoping it's going to go away.
Yeah, I think the networks are doing a favor, and it's not entirely different than what you've been talking about, John, which is basically just don't let them come out. But,
the
networks, I guess, are taking it by the horns and saying, well, we're going to do it a little differently, and it solves, and it gets to the issue. It has the same effect, and therefore there's not going to be the controversy that's surrounding it because of it.
Right. Again, the thing I think is so evident right now, they just need to make this go away.
Right. I think what Tony Dungy said, though, it may add to the tensions. Did you see what he's going to do or what he's advocating?
What's that? Say?
Well, he said that, look, this is just not the proper forum or the proper fora to talk about these kinds of important issues. It's about the message and how it's communicated. Kneeling or, sticking your fist up in the air may not be the proper way to convey some of the concerns that we as Americans have about the issues surrounding, race and justice in this country. And he said that when he's going out with NBC, he'll offer any player the opportunity to talk about it on his show, should they choose to do so. And I think that's interesting, John. And I think it's really, it shows you the insight and the empathy and also the deep knowledge and innovation that Dungy has as a thinker about this sport.
Yes. No, I agree. I think that Tony is sensational when, as far as that goes, and he's well thought of and well thought through on just about anything that he's involved with. I mean, I've had the fortune to cover him in his first year as a rookie, as a player, and then being there when he was in his mid-20s, coming in after being cut by the 49ers and having his first interview as an assistant coach, and then watching his growth and all that stuff.
Indeed, indeed. What do you think about Witten doing the color commentary for Monday Night Football, John? Any thoughts?
Wasn't thrilling. I thought he was okay.
Yeah.
Wasn't great. But again, you know, it's the first time, so.
Right. I think he's a
good one. You don't want to overreact.
Yeah, right. Good call. I think he's going to grow into that role. John.
I thought Joe Tessitore did well.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know much about the man, but I was impressed. He gave the people what they needed to hear, and then as most people on television, you kind of need to lift the game play itself out because people can see what's going on. So I think it was just the right touch, John. Just the right touch.
Mm-hmm. No,
Cleo
I thought
Mack,
that was a.
Looks like there's,
a,
there's issues with Cleo Mack and with tax issues. Looks like he's. I think that's one of the main issues that's hanging everybody up here with this deal that he hasn't made with the Raiders yet is the tax issue. Have you heard anything about that, John?
Well, honestly, I think that if Khalil is worried about that, I think that helps everything. Because, for example, you know, if he's willing to take a little bit of a risk and do it like a third-year option and get more money there, let's say, for example, he takes $15 million a year for the first 2 years, 2 years, $30
okay.
million, and he makes up the rest in years 3, 4, and 5, I think that's great.
Yeah, I think what you're looking at, though, there, John, is it's not entirely different than what he has right now and what he's going to be getting paid this year, if he mm-hmm. reports. You know, I mean, you need to bump it up a bit more. But I think you're right. I think it does help the situation out. Well, I think he'll be there for the first game, John. What do you think?
I don't think he wants to miss a game check. I think that's pretty evident. You know, they need, and that's where I think there's a chance they'll get something done. And you hope they get something done. They need to get something done.
Yeah. You and I both think that. That's good. Okay. So, what are you going to be looking for tonight, John, when you're at the game?
I'm going to be looking to see, naturally, I've got the Charger sideline, so I want to see Phillip Rivers. I want to see Melvin Gordon. I want to see how much better that passing offense is going to be because, you know, Keenan Allen has now come on his, and he's looking good. And I just want to see, you know, what they have to replace Jason Verrett at cornerback. I want to see that. Yeah. So, you know, just a lot of things. See where they are at linebacker. Unfortunately, you know, no Joey Bosa tonight, and I love watching him. So
right.
That's going to be the fun thing. Hey, Jim, thank you for the phone call.
Okay, John, take care.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bryant in Fremont. Hey, Bryant.
Hey, how's it going, Professor?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing very well, just walking around in the sunshine. And I've been hearing everyone talking about the new helmet contact rules going on and all the confusion. And I was watching a NFL Network show the other day when they're talking about perfect hits and clean hits and the best hits of the year, and it started off with Cam Chancellor, you know, putting some good shoulders on people, and I was wondering if he was ever going to get credit or the Seahawks going to get credit for the advances they've made in proper tackling and form in the NFL.
They probably won't get credit, but they have to be certainly given under consideration because, you know, they have done a good job of doing that. And I think Cam Chancellor was probably among the best we've seen as far as adjusting his game. You know, under with these new rules back when he was a rookie and a second-year player, I mean, he probably would have ejections like crazy. But then he was able to go ahead and adjust his launch point and everything else to make these big hits all legal. I mean, you look around the league, I think he's done as good of a job as anybody in football.
I think of all time. And I'm really glad you waited till you pick up my phone because I just tripped over a curb while I was walking my dog and fell on my face right before you got me.
Ooh, I'm sorry about that. Are you going to be okay?
It's all in fun. Oh, no, I'm all good. I'm very round, so I roll.
Okay.
The important question I have for you, Mr. Professor Clayton, is what's another name for Pirate's Treasure?
Pirate's Treasure.
I believe that would be Booty.
Okay. Okay.
Have a good day, sir.
All right. Hey, thank you, Brian. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now from Seahawks.com is John Boyle. And I guess, it was a surprising move yesterday that Marcus Smith was let go. And I guess we'll find out in time what ended up happening. I guess there were some personal issues in that. So just from the standpoint of the loss of Marcus Smith, I know you had to be surprised. I was surprised. And, that takes away a pretty good player.
It does, yeah. I mean, he was a guy that, as you said, we don't know what's going on. Pete Carroll obviously was careful about just calling it a personal situation, and, that's obviously their right to keep quiet on that. But he was a guy that was a big part of that pass rush rotation. So at least until we see what, Eric Walden can bring, that's going to be kind of another question mark in a spot that there were some concerns. The good news is, they've been seeing some good things out of some young guys there, particularly Rasheem Green, but also Jacob Martin. So it's, maybe you feel a little better about your depth there than you did a month or two ago. But still, yeah, it's, he was a guy that was a big part of the rotation until this past week. So we'll have to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, because now when you really think about it, with Marcus Smith gone and, Deion Jordan kind of uncertain, like four of the top five pass rushers on last year's team, right now they're either not here or unavailable in the case of Deion Jordan. So that is a little scary.
Yeah, I mean, that was always, with Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill moving on, that was always going to be a pretty big concern, at least question mark heading into the season. And the good news, Frank Clark is getting back full go, and we're going to see him on the field tonight. So that's obviously a big boost because he was, their most productive pass rusher the last couple of years or one of. So, if Deion Jordan, we still don't know exactly when he's going to be back. But until he's back, whenever he's back, there's going to be some concern there. As I said earlier, they do like what they've seen out of some young guys. Rasheem Green had the sack and a half, and Marquavius Mingo's shown some good stuff. So it's not so much they don't have the numbers to get it done; it's just they don't have as many proven guys. So some guys are going to kind of have to step up.
Well, it's funny because we're all in this stage of trying to figure out the 53-man roster, and week to week you make adjustments and things of that nature. But I know from what we saw last week of the rookie class, the draft class, and Puna Ford, that looks pretty impressive. And I know some stories that came out this week saying, hey, don't be surprised if some of the cuts are going to surprise you. Be some of the veterans that you might think would be locks. And when you really start to think about it, that could be the case, and this being the first one. Now, again, we don't know what it was with Marcus, but I get the feeling there's going to be some surprise cuts.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of always the case when you get to the end of the month here that somebody who we all assume is pretty safe and a walk to make the team gets beat out, whether it's just somebody younger is performing well or a lot of times there's financial considerations. So, yeah, I mean, I don't pretend to know think I know what's going to happen when that deadline comes. But, you just happened to mention Puna Ford, and he's a guy that, seems like every year there's an undrafted guy or two that makes a name for himself, and a few different coaches have spoken pretty highly of him. So, that they like a lot of the kind of veteran guys in that rotation and some of the guys they have back. So that D-tackle rotation is going to be tough to crack, but he sure got a shot to do it.
Well, maybe one thing that I'm underestimating is that some of the guys that you would consider to be on the borderline of making the team may have been doing better than people think. Like, for example, I mean, we've watched it. There's been so many times where Brandon Jackson has been running first team. Now, again, a lot of that's because, no Deion Jordan and at least until this week, no Frank Clark. But, and I know I was talking to Clint Hurt the other day, and he feels if you include Quentin Jefferson that they're six deep for quality at defensive tackle. But of course, I mean, Jefferson can also learn the end position and have that flexibility. And so what you kind of wonder is that have we maybe underestimated Quentin Jefferson and Brandon Jackson?
Those are two names that keep coming up, and especially Jefferson. He's a guy that, he had the knee injury as a rookie. He actually got cut here, ended up with the Rams for a little bit and then came back. So you know, it's kind of been an up and down career so far, but coaches are just raving about the condition he's in, how well he's moving. And yeah, Brandon Jackson too, you know, he's saying he's back, you know, better, moving better, better shape, all that. So, I mean, right now as it stands, I'd be pretty surprised if those guys both aren't on the team, but it's just saying you never know, you know, how things shake out. But, you know, this kind of goes back to the earlier stuff about the pass rush. There's definitely a lot of production to make up for from last year, but there are some guys who, you know, whether it's young guys or just guys taking on bigger roles, they do think are kind of ready to step up.
Yeah, see, I'm kind of partial to both those guys, Jackson and Quinton, because Quinton went to my high school, and Brandon Jackson just lived down the road from me in McKeesport, where I grew up in Braddock and Forest Hills. So it's like a little partial to them, just like Brandon Marshall.
You know, another thing really helping Quinton Jefferson is he's pretty versatile where he can play on that line. So, you know, that's a guy that you look at, you can move around and put on the end to be more of a run stopper, be an interior guy. So that's going to help him a lot too, get on the field, as he can do a few different things.
Well, I mean, isn't it the same thing for like J.D. McKissic? I mean, that's where, you know, let's say, for example, if you want to include Jefferson as a, DN / D tackle, you know, that, because I would have to figure they're going to keep 10 defensive linemen. Don't you think that's a fair thought? And if that's the case,
nine can start to feel thin if you got an injury crop up. If everybody's healthy and they've got injuries, and, you know, sometimes that initial 53 is not what it's going to be all year. And if you had a situation where you know, guys are banged up on one side of the ball and you need an extra body, you could go nine. But yeah, 10 seems to be like the number, just given the talent there. And it gets a little flexibility too of who's a strong side linebacker, who's a DN with a guy like Jacob Martin. So sometimes there's a little bit of kind of mix between those two. But yeah, I think 10 is probably the number.
And it's like, I don't know, how do you think the breakdown is going to be running back, wide receiver? Because I'm kind of thinking, you know, it can be four running backs, and we'll see what it goes at the fullback position, but four running backs and a fullback. But then, you know, J.D. McKissic kind of gives you the advantage that if you want to put him in the receiver room, you can do that and maybe, you know, let one receiver extra go and keep an extra running back. Because what I'm wondering right now is that, you know, you look at C.J. Procise and you kind of think that, you know, he's maybe on the outside looking into a degree, but with Rashad Penny, you know, pretty much going to be out for the next few weeks and maybe not going into the regular season, being able to get full speed and get the full speed of the game because he's coming back from injury, that, you know, maybe McKissic can temporarily get in there to start the season as the backup, with McKissic kind of being there to, you know, bridge the gap between receiver and running back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big reason McKissic was on, you know, was able to make the team last year, and then obviously he played a lot because of injuries at running back, but he's a guy that really does save you a roster spot because he can be both those spots, and he's a really good special teams player as well. So, yeah, you know, I don't know if I necessarily agree on Procise that he's outside looking in at this point. There's so much talent there, and he's still on that rookie contract that, you know, if he can't get on the field the rest of camp and all these games, then, yeah, that's a concern. But if all it was a 2-3-day hip flexor injury and he stays healthy, I just don't know how you possibly part ways with somebody who did what he's done so far when he has been healthy. But either way, you know, the numbers, both those positions and really receiver are interesting to me because it's just going to be hard to determine who you keep. And if you know, it seems more and more like Brandon Marshall's forcing his way onto this team. And if he does, he's not a guy who's going to help you on special teams. So does that get you an extra receiver who's a special teams guy? And then when you start considering special teams with all these spots, does it look a little different overall roster construction because of the new kickoff rules? You don't have offensive linemen out there anymore. You've got more skilled guys. So maybe you can carry one extra, whether it's receiver or running back, and one fewer offensive lineman or something like that.
Yeah, that I would agree with that. So, yeah, in fact, that's what I'm thinking about with Procise, and you're right about it, because, I mean, the Procise situation is very much like the Alex Collins situation last year. You knew that Alex had really good talent, but again, if you had to let one guy go, he was the one guy, and he goes over to Baltimore and gains almost 1,000 yards, and you look at the talent that Procise is, you know, 230 pounds, catches the ball real well. That's why I'm kind of wondering, that's why these next three games for him, I think, are crucial, because you know, you now can have, you know, if you keep Procise, you have the luxury of kind of easing Penny into the rotation at running back, you know, behind Chris Carson, you know, and maybe for the game to open up the season in Denver, you have Procise there as the backup, and, you know, you maybe get Penny a few carries, but, you know, I can see that Procise still has good value on this team. It's just a matter of the, how many backs can you keep?
Exactly. And you said it. I mean, he's got to show these next few weeks, and people talked about that after practice yesterday. Is, you know, these are big opportunities for him, and he missed that first game. So, and he knows it. I mean, he's talked about over and over with the media this camp that, you know, he's got a lot to show.
No question. I was watching some of the cornerback drills the other day, and I was really impressed. Now, I know this was a day that Myron Maxwell and Nico Thorpe weren't practicing, but the way that Trey Flowers, Dante Johnson, who came on this week, and they were trying to go, you know, long down the right sidelines, and they were stopping just about everything in some of these drill works. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, the defense had a good couple days overall, but yeah, those defensive backs have been playing well. And that, you know, before he got hurt, Byron Maxwell was pretty firmly entrenched with the number one defense at right corner. But him being out really opened the door for Flowers in particular. And then, as you said, we're seeing Dante Johnson. And that's suddenly looking like a pretty legit competition there for that spot. I think Flowers might be coming along a little faster than they could have expected for a safety making that switch. So, you know, I think a lot of us probably looked at that as he's a guy that maybe you consider putting in there later in the season if he develops, but he's kind of forcing the issue a little bit. So, you know, I still think Byron Maxwell got a really good shot to win that job. He's a very experienced player, but, you know, as Dante Johnson gets going, as Flower keeps growing, and then, you know, who knows when Nico Thorpe's back, he's in the mix too. So that's going to be a really competitive spot for really the rest of camp.
Oh, I agree. You continue to really be impressed. I have been with Tedrick Thompson at free safety. He shows good range. He's, you know, again, having not really seen him in that position at free safety, he has good size. I mean, really looks pretty good right now.
He does, yeah. I mean, they're very excited about him. You know, really they have been since they drafted him. The one thing they talked about on draft day and have continued to is his, you know, just ability to be around the ball. I think he led college football in pass breakups, and he had 7 interceptions or something as a senior. And that really shows up. He's, you know, he makes plays. He's either breaking up passes, you know, getting hands on the ball, intercepting it. And, you know, it's been interesting to see how that's really just kind of settled on those two. And early on, there was a lot of rotating. It was, you know, you move McDougal back and forth between free and strong so you could get whether it's a Maurice Alexander or Delano Hill in there, but they seem really settled on that duo, and I think that'll be good for that secondary if you can keep those two together and kind of get the relationship strong between those two.
You know, no question. Big game, I would have to think, tonight for Jermaine Ifedi, you know, because I know Russell Wilson was talking about, and I thought it was kind of an interesting comment that he made. He says, for continuity and consistency, this is the best he's seen of the line since end of the 2013 season. But, you know, the one guy that still needs, I think, to play better is Jermaine Ifedi.
Yeah, in particular, just the penalties are the biggest thing for him. And Pete Carroll's called him out on that a couple times, that they're disappointed when they see it. You know, you got that mock game they had. They pulled him mid-series after he had a couple of penalties. So, you know, there's all the talents there, and he knows exactly what he needs to do. It's just getting it right. And, yeah, I mean, they really want to – it's pretty apparent they want to get that five settled and established so they can work together and build that continuity that – Russell Wilson mentioned, but you also need to make sure it's the right five guys and guys who aren't going to get a bunch of penalties for you. I mean, that was Pete Carroll, the last press conference of the year, you know, he didn't specify Ifedi, but he talked about how much penalties bothered him and were an issue that year. And, you know, he was the most penalized guy on the team. So they got to get that cleaned up. Ifedi knows it. The whole team knows it. So if, I think he's, you know, he's still young and he could be a really good player if he can get that figured out. So this is, you know, these game opportunities are big for him to show it.
And then finally, it just seems that Russell Wilson seems to fit so naturally in what Brian Schottenheimer is doing with the offense. It really just seems to complement him very well.
Yeah, and you know, that's, you go back to when they hired Schottenheimer, Pete Carroll was pretty clear that one of the main reasons was the quarterback. And, you know, Schottenheimer's been a quarterback guy his whole career, and you know, they changed up kind of the structure where Schottenheimer is kind of the sole voice for that offense. It's not, you know, a split between an offensive line coach and a coordinator kind of doing two different things. So you've got, you know, it's very clearly Schottenheimer's offense, and he and Russell Wilson are together all the time. And, yeah, it's, you know, we need to see it more in games. It was one series, but it was a very good series last week. But, yeah, it's, you know, I've kind of said this all along that for all the player changes, if Schottenheimer can bring out a Russell Wilson early in the game, kind of what he was in the fourth quarter of games last year, that would be a bigger move than any player personnel move they could make.
John Boyle, Seahawks.com. Read him. And, of course, great talking to you, and I'll be seeing you tonight.
Absolutely. See you down here.
Okay, that's John Boyle. Of course, read him on Seahawks.com. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Suki in Seattle. Hey, Suki.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Great.
Hey, I was wondering, who do you think that needs to stand out in today's game, one of the Seahawks players besides C.J. Procise? Because I know everybody is questioning how C.J. Procise can keep healthy during the preseason, but I was wondering who else do you think would you like to watch out for?
Well, I mean, we're not going to see him, unfortunately, but Amara Darbo. You know, Darbo, he's going to miss tonight's game. And, again, I think sometimes he gets kind of lumped in with C.J. Procise, which is unfair because the thing that Darbo had, I mean, he was the fourth, fifth receiver, so he didn't get many opportunities to be on the field. And that's not his fault. The same thing for Nick Vinette. You know, if you're the third tight end, how much time are you going to be able to get on the field? So I would have to think I would put Darbo in that kind of same boat as Procise. And, again, unfortunately, Darbo's not going to play tonight. They're going to sit him out. He should be able to return to practice this week. That's going to be there. I'd have to think that you still need to see a little bit more of Nico Thorpe, but I think Thorpe's still in a good position for a couple reasons. You know, one, he's a very good special teams player. Two, he's one of the few guys that I think can fill in at the slot. You know, they're real good with Justin Coleman there, so I think that he needs to kind of keep watching on things and all of that. You look on the offensive line, Jermaine Ifedi's still the starter and going to stay that way, but he needs a good game tonight, so I think you need to watch him. And so those are some of the ones to watch. And, and I think maybe, even DJ Alexander, because as good of a, he's a Pro Bowl special teams player, but he's been hurt pretty much the OTAs, the mini camp, and also, so far a good portion of the training camp. I think you need to watch him because, again, they won out and they, got another linebacker, slash linebacker, and Eric Walden. So, I think those are some of the ones that you need to kind of watch.
Thank you very much, John.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.